One of the longings we have is to be understood. Not necessarily to be justified in everything we think and do, but at least to be understood. I think that's a pretty common human longing, a human desire. If you go to Genesis chapter 16, we'll start with some history and talk a little bit about this tonight, and then let it go at that before we send you off into a new week. Genesis chapter 16, to kind of set the scene, God has called Abraham. That was in chapter 12, promised him a son. That son was supposed to come from him and Sarah. And years passed, there was no child, and they came up with a different plan that Abraham would have a child by Hagar, Sarah's handmaid. And so that's what they did. And when Hagar conceived, she rubbed Sarah the wrong way over that, and Sarah wanted her out of the house. And so Sarah had Abram send her out. It says in verse 7, "The angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. He said, 'Hagar, Sarah's maid, where have you come from and where are you going?' And she said, 'I am fleeing from the presence of my mistress, Sarah.' The angel of the Lord said to her, 'Return to your mistress and submit yourself to her authority.' Moreover, the angel of the Lord said to her, 'I will greatly multiply your descendants so that they will be too many to count.' The angel of the Lord said to her further, 'Behold, you are with child, and you will bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has given heed to your affliction.' So his name is to be what? Ishmael. If you look over in your, if you got a column off to the side and some notes, what does the name Ishmael mean? He hears. God hears. God heard Hagar. Now, who was Hagar? Was she? Yeah, she was a handmaid, Sarah's handmaid. Was not Abram's wife, was a handmaid. Was she part of God's plan originally? She was not. God knows all these things, and here's this poor woman out in the wilderness with child, and God says, you go back to Sarah and submit yourself, and I want you to name that boy that I have heard. Well, that's not quite the end of it. The angel says to her in verse 12, "He'll be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone. Everyone's hand will be against him. And he will live to the east of all his brothers." And then she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are a God who sees." For she said, "I have even remained alive here after seeing him." So, Ishmael, God hears. She names the angel, God's messenger, the God who sees. Why is this in the book? Even though it happened, why would God put this in here? He didn't say why he put it in. He just put it in, and we read this, and I'm convinced we're supposed to learn something from it, something to be taught. And so I read this, and I think about it. Wow, God hears, God sees. What else could I learn but that right there? And then we go to chapter 23. And chapter 23 is where we read about Sarah dying. Genesis chapter 23. It says, "Sarah lived 127 years, and these were the years of the life of Sarah. Sarah died in Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron." You remember Hebron? Hebron is the city that God told David to make his first capital when David became king. It's just south and I think a little bit west of Jerusalem. So that's where they are geographically. And it says, "He went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And then Abram arose from before his dead and spoke to the sons of Heth, saying,
I am a stranger and a sojourner among you. Give me a burial site among you that I may bury my dead out of my sight. Do you remember God called Abram and said, you get up out of your country, you go to a land that I'll show you, and Abraham is moving towards that place. And so this is not his homeland, and he's talking to the sons of Heth, asking for a place to bury his dead. So, verse 6, I'm going to see a phrase here we'll see for five times. They say to Abram, hear us, my Lord, hear us. That's the phrase, hear us. Hear us, my Lord, you are a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our graves. None of us will refuse you his grave for burying your dead. I like reading this. It's a sad circumstance, a sad situation, but Abram is among strangers and they are being so hospitable, and they are saying before they tell him what to do in having a place to bury Sarah, they say, hear us, hear us. Abram rose in verse 7 and bowed to the people of the land, the sons of Heth. And he spoke with them, saying, if it is your wish for me to bury my dead out of my sight, hear me, hear me. And approach Ephron, the son of Zohar, for me, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owns, which is at the end of his field. For the full price, let him give it to me in your presence for a burial site. Now Ephron was sitting among the sons of Heth, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham, in the hearing of the sons of Heth, even all who went in at the gate of the city, saying, no, my Lord, hear me. There it is again, hear me. I give you the field, and I give you the cave that is in it. In the presence of the sons of my people, I give it to you. Bury your dead. And Abram bowed before the people of the land, and he spoke to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, saying, if you will only please listen to me, please listen to me. I will give the price of the field. Accept it from me that I may bury my dead there. And then Ephron answered Abram, saying to him, my Lord, listen to me. A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver, what is that between me and you? So bury your dead. And what does verse 16 say? Abraham listened to Ephron. And Abraham weighed out for Ephron the silver which he had named in the hearing of the sons of Heth, 400 shekels of silver, commercial standard. So Ephron's field, which was in Machpelah, which faced Mamre, the field and cave which was in it, and all the trees which are in the field that were within all the confines of its border, were deeded over to Abraham for a possession in the presence of the sons of Heth before all who went in at the city, at the gate of this city. After this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field at Machpelah, facing Mamre, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So the field and the cave that is in it were deeded over to Abram for a burial site by the sons of Heth. I was talking with a friend of mine, brother in Christ, last week about this very thing. And it's interesting that there is this exchange, and they keep saying to one another, hear me, listen to me. It's not like there's an argument going on, a big fuss. They're just men talking about a circumstance. A problem has arisen and they're trying to resolve it together. And they're being very neighborly, very hospitable, very godly, I would say, in their exchange. But they keep saying to one another, hear me, hear me. Do you ever use that? Do you ever say, listen to me? In a normal conversation, we probably don't. And so I wonder about this. Why is it here? Why did they say that? What was behind their repetition of the phrase? And even if one guy said it, why did the others say it as well? Why was it a back and forth thing? And I wonder if it's not here so that we'll read this, just like I'm wondering about Hagar and Ishmael. God hears. And the God who sees, the name of the angel that she gave him. And now we read this. Hear me, listen to me. Hear me, listen to me. No fuss. Just this request. And when we ask that, whenever I say that, whenever we preface our remarks with, listen to me,
It's when you're trying to make a serious point and you want that point to be heard and you want it to be understood and you want it to be accepted. But mostly you want it to be understood. And how many of us are seeking to be understood? In our own lives, by our family, seeking to be understood, especially by God. We don't want people to misunderstand. We don't want people to get the wrong idea. And sometimes we'll say that. We'll be talking to one another and we'll say something and we'll say, now don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. What are we afraid of? Well, you're afraid they might get you wrong. Because you don't want them thinking that you think something that you don't think. You want them to think that what you think is what they think you think because you told them to think it. And yeah, see, I know it's kind of funny, but we really do seek to be understood, not justified, but understood. Now we go from these things. By the way, that cave, that stayed with Abraham's family. Abraham himself would be buried there. And if you look at chapter 49 of Genesis, just so you can see how this plays out over time. Chapter 49 of Genesis. This is when Joseph has brought his brothers and all their family down into Egypt. And it says in verse 28, all these are the 12 tribes of Israel. And this is what their father said to them when he blessed them. He blessed them, everyone, with the blessing appropriate to him. And then he charged them and said to them, I'm about to be gathered to my people. Who's this? This is Jacob. Jacob, the father of all these boys. I'm about to be gathered to my people. Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel, and these are the sons of Israel. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite. Now, don't you think that's interesting? Who bought the field? Abram bought the field. And what did it say in the text? It said it was deeded over. And it was deeded over in the hearing of the people at the city gate. And yet, when Jacob is talking about it, he still speaks of this field as the field of Ephron the Hittite. And he's not saying that there's ownership involved. It's just that that's the field, you know, that field of Ephron's that Abram bought. It's before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought along with the field from Ephron the Hittite for a burial site. There they buried Abraham and his wife Sarah. There they buried Isaac and his wife Rebekah. And there I buried Leah, the field and the cave which is in it, purchased from the sons of Heth. What an important place that was to that family. And it all started with a conversation where Abram and the men of Heth were saying, hear me, listen to me. Hear me, listen to me. Now let's jump all the way to the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6. Right in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says this, beware. Chapter 6, verse 1, of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them, otherwise you have no reward with your Father who's in heaven. When you give to the poor, what are you supposed to do? He says, well, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets so that they may be honored by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Yet, it's a funny thing that we tend to take things literally unless we know better. And I remember growing up and there were people, when they would make their contribution, they would look the other way as they dropped it in the plate. Now, I'm not laughing at them. It's just, it's an interesting thing that people would look at this passage and think, okay, I'm going to drop it in the plate and I'm going to look away because I'm not supposed to let my left hand know while my right hand do it. Now, if you drop it with your left, how's your right hand got? You put it in your pocket, I guess. I don't know. What's he saying? He's saying this is something to be done privately. This is not a show. Don't be like the hypocrites who sound the trumpet so everybody will see what they're doing. But look at verse 4.
so that your giving will be in, what's the next word in your translation? In secret. Your giving is in secret. Will God know if it's done in secret? That's his point. That's his exact point. That your giving will be in secret, and your Father who sees will reward you. Your Father sees what is done in secret. When you give, God knows it. Nobody else needs to know it, but God knows it. Verse 5, when you pray, you're not to be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners so that they may be seen by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But you, when you pray, where are you supposed to go when you pray? Go to your inner room. And then what do? You close the door. Go to your inner room and close the door. You have an inner room in your house? You got a place where you could go and it would be really private and nobody's going to bother you there? Well, maybe so, unless you have toddlers. If you've got toddlers, they will find you. That's the way they work. But that's what Jesus says to do. You go to your inner room, close your door, and pray to your Father who is in, there's that word again, in the English language, it's secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. When you're praying, do not use meaningless repetition as the Gentiles do. They suppose that they'll be heard for their many words. Don't be like them. Why not be like them, according to verse 8? Because your Father knows what you need. When does he know it? As soon as you explain the situation to him in prayer, he'll know. He knows what you need before you even begin to ask. How great is that? I mean, when you think about it. What if you and I had to explain things to God so he would understand and know what to do for us, and then you get it wrong? You don't really say the words right or whatever. He knows. He knows. It's right back to the name of Ishmael, which means he hears. And the name Hagar gave God or his angel who was sent. He sees, God who sees. It's Abram and the sons of Heth going, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. And they listened. They heard one another. And the deal was struck. And something was given to that family that blessed them for ages. And we still are reading about it today, all these centuries later, millennia later, actually. And so Jesus comes along and he says, do what you do in secret. You don't need to do it out in the open. And then you get to verse 16. Whenever you fast. It's interesting, he doesn't say if you decide to fast. He says whenever you fast. Do not put on a gloomy face as the hypocrites do. They neglect their appearance so that they will be noticed by men when they're fasting. Truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. But you, when you fast, anoint your head, wash your face, so that your fasting will not be noticed by men, but by your Father who is in, there it is, in secret. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. God sees our hearts. He knows our minds. He's aware of every fear we have, every confidence we have. He knows us inside and out better than we know ourselves. I've said before, I'll say it again, I have a spirit. I don't know anything about my spirit. I don't know how it resides in my body, or if it resides in my body, or if it's outside. I think it's in my body. It's connected, because James says when the spirit leaves the body, then you're dead. And that's spoken of in other places as well. But how much do you know about your spirit, your soul? But God is infinitely as well, I guess, aware of your spirit and your soul and everything that's right with you and everything that's wrong with you. And he completely understands you. That's one of the reasons I'm so happy to always go to God in prayer, because I know he already knows. I'm never going to reveal anything to him that's going to make him go, oh, I didn't know that about you, Marty. Maybe I'll have to change my opinion of you. He already knows, and he keeps saying, come, come, come. But come in secret. Nobody else needs to know.
This is between you and me. So while our evangelism is out in the open, our relationship with God is one that we do in secret. And he rewards in secret. These are just a few things I thought I would bring tonight to get us thinking about things that I know, I'm confident you appreciate them like I do. So these things being said, we'll have our invitation song in a minute. And if there's anybody here who would like to respond to the invitation, either by being baptized or need the prayers of this congregation, whatever it might be, this is the invitation song. Are you surprised? How long has this lesson been? Anybody got a watch? You've been timing it? Anybody going to say amen? Amen. Let's stand and sing.